I'm going to go ahead and read the thing. There's an old children's rhyme about an old woman who swallows a fly, and then a spider to eat that fly, and then a bird to eat that spider, and then a cat to eat that bird, and so it goes. Native food webs are much like that. Things have their natural predators. These predators are eaten by the things above them, etc. So what happens when you disrupt this food web, intentionally, by introducing a predator to control a prey population? Say you have a problem with an insect that's incredibly destructive to one of your most profitable cash crops, and none of your native insect predators are stepping up. Well, there's a predator of similar insects in an environment all the way across the world, so let's take those and introduce them. That should work, right? Well, just like the old lady eventually swallowed enough things to kill her, in the 1930s, Australia's sugar industry intentionally introduced an animal to the dangerous, violent, and incredibly delicate food web of their country. It had an immediate negative effect and has only spread since then, to the point where there's a real danger that this animal could disrupt the entirety of Australia's ecosystem. On this episode of Relative Disasters, the Australian cane toad. Welcome to Relative Disasters, the show where I dilute 4 parts toxin to 1 part hallucinogen, carefully spread those onto a toad, gently place that toad into a podcast, and send that out to my sister and anyone else who feels like listening. My much cooler big sister and I manage our existential dread by talking with each other about terrible and interesting historical events, their contexts, implications, and any related sidebars that tend to distract us. My name is Greg, my sister's name is Ella, and Ella, today we're going to talk about a toad. Our sources for this episode include The Cane Toad, Bufo Moranis, a biography by Walter Lawson for the School of Australian Environmental Studies, Griffith University, in 1987, Australian Frogs, A Natural History by Michael J. Tyler, published in 1994, Methods of Cane Toad Euthanasia, published by the Australian Department of the Environment and Energy, published in 2011, as well as dozens of contemporary and historical scientific articles. Seriously, there is a lot to read about cane toads. So, the cane toad is usually held up as the best, or worst, I guess, example of an invasive species in world history. One scientist, and I'm paraphrasing here, likened it to having almost as much effect on the environment of Australia as the arrival of European colonization. Its effect has been so devastating that the Australian government has labeled it as a key threatening process to the environment. So how did we get here? What is a cane toad? Why is it so destructive? And how did it get to Australia? Australia's ecosystem is famously cutthroat. But that masks an incredible delicacy. The joke is that everything in Australia will kill you, and the truth isn't that far off. Australia, being an island continent, is home to many endemic species, species that exist nowhere else in the world, and those species have adapted to their environment incredibly well. Despite these adaptations, or, more accurately, due to them, any disruption in those environmental niches can have massive ripple effects. A great example is the koala. It only lives in Australia, and it only eats the leaves of the eucalyptus tree, leaves that are poisonous, but the koala has adapted a way to digest them safely. However, koala are so dependent on their single food source that disruption to that food source, say by cutting down the trees to make more room for people, starves and kills the animals. In 1900, there were an estimated 10 million koala living in Australia. Today, that number could be as low as 43,000, and even the highest estimates are only in the 100,000 range. We've already talked about the rabbits of Australia problem. Other majorly threatened life forms include the Great Barrier Reef, which is slowly dying from illegal dumping, mining, rising water temperatures, and general human interference. Sharks, especially in Queensland, are culled, throwing those biodiversity systems out of alignment, as we talked about on the sharks episode. And due to both its biodiversity and threatened environments, Australia is home to 21 critically endangered species, 128 endangered species, and several hundred vulnerable species. In the last 200 years, a blink in the eyes of evolution, 111 endemic Australian species have gone extinct. This is an environment that does not handle the introduction of any new species well. In the 1930s, the Australian sugarcane industry had a problem. Sugar was, and is, incredibly profitable, and they were losing a lot of money to a bug. Not just any bug, mind you, but a very destructive bug that bases its whole life cycle around destroying sugarcane, acting more like a parasite than a regular insect-slash-flora relationship. The gray-backed cane beetle is a nasty little guy, consisting of a very hard exoskeleton and an insatiable appetite for the leaves of sugarcane. Female cane beetles lay their eggs among the roots of the sugarcane, which allows the grubs to aggressively feed on them, killing the plant. Their whole life cycle, from birth to death, is based around killing the plant that sustains them and then moving on to the next one. A lot of pest controls were tried, from pesticides to manually inspecting the plants daily and crushing the beetles between rocks, and nothing really worked. The pesticides killed other beneficial insects while having minimal impact on the hardy cane beetle, and crushing the adults and digging up the larvae and grubs was both time-consuming and the beetles could reproduce faster than they could be killed. Sugarcane farmers were in trouble, and the Australian Bureau of Sugar Experiment Stations settled on a solution. Their savior? The South American cane toad. Now, in South America, the cane toad occupies a great place in the food web, that of a mid-level predator. The cane toad preys on a number of insects, including the South American cane beetles, from which they get their name, and they also eat small mammals, like mice, they eat small birds and bats, and they eat other small reptiles and amphibians. In fact, like many frog species, they are cannibalistic and eat each other with regularity. They have a number of predators, such as caimans and snakes, eels, and the awesome and terrifying bullet ants. Their main defense is that, like many frog and toad species from South America, they are very toxic, capable of killing humans if ingested. The Emberawanan people of Panama milk the toads for their toxins to be used for their poisonous arrows or darts, and there is evidence that the Olmec people used their diluted toxins combined with their secreted bufotenin as a psychoactive psychedelic hallucinogen. Don't lick these toads, though, as their ratio of bufotenin to bufotoxin is low. You're going to poison yourself before you ever get on that psychedelic bicycle. So, in its home environment, the cane toad is a great little guy, keeping its prey in check and providing lovely meals for its predators. What could possibly go wrong? Well, the Australian sugar folks weren't operating totally in the dark. There had been successful control of a species just a few years earlier by an introduction of a predator. The prickly pear cactus plants are an invasive species to Australia, and they weren't responding to regular means of control until the South American cactus moth was introduced, which quickly and efficiently exterminated the cactus species. Unfortunately, of course, that moth has since spread to the United States, where it's doing tons of damage to the western U.S.'s cactus industry, but that's a whole nother invasive species story. As far as the 1930s Australian government was concerned, biological pest control was the best idea, and they put it into practice. Also, they had some good data on the cane toad. In the early 1900s, cane toads had been introduced to Puerto Rico to control the sugarcane beetles that were ravaging Puerto Rico's sugarcane crops, and they were successful. Now, again, this was a different type of beetle, but surely it would work again, right? They imported 101 cane toads from Hawaii. From those, they bred about 60,000 toadlets and released them into the wild. And look, it didn't work at all. All that happened was a species with no predators was introduced into a delicate environment. The plan of them eating the cane beetles never happened. You see, cane toads can't reach the beetles high up in the sugarcane stalks, where the leaves are, and they don't dig into the ground to eat the grubs and larvae. So, Yeah, complete failure. Except for the toads. They are doing just fine. By 1959, they had conquered the coast of Queensland, easily displacing the native predators, outcompeting the local species, and just generally ruining everything. By 1978, they had crossed into New South Wales, and by 1984, they had crossed into the Northern Territory, and by 2001, they had invaded Kakadu National Park. By 2023, they have encroached on Sydney, pushing south and west at an astonishing rate of around 60 kilometers a year. So they've proven to be very successful in the Australian environment. But why is this so bad? Well, let's talk about the physiology of the cane toad. We've already talked about how toxic they are, and there are no predators in Australia with immunity to it, so anyone trying to predate on them dies. And we can tell from the rate of spread that they are very fast reproducers. So what else? Well, for starters, they are huge, with an average length of between 10 to 15 centimeters. That's 4 to 6 inches. Some have been found to be nearly double that, with a few specimens reaching 24 centimeters, or around 9.5 inches. They usually weigh about 450 grams, or about a pound, but some specimens are up to 1.5 kilograms, about 3 pounds. These are large toads. Additionally, their life cycle is fast. Females lay 8 to 25,000 eggs at once, which take about 4 weeks to become tadpoles, then rapidly grow from toadlets to adults in a matter of days. And that's the important part, because their toadlet phase is the only time they aren't toxic, having left behind their tadpole toxicity and not yet grown their adult paratoid glands. This is the part of their life cycle where they are most likely to be predated upon in their native environment, but it only really lasts about a week to a week and a half, and then boom, they're adults and can start laying more eggs. They can outcompete most of the native life in the areas they've invaded, and they cannot be killed easily. They've wiped out a huge number of native predators, such as the koala and the goanna, allowing their prey objects to bloom out of control. This ripple effect has serious consequences. There's a direct link from the goanna deaths due to eating the cane toads and dying from it, to a new boom in saltwater crocodile populations. The goanna is a major predator on saltwater crocodile eggs, helping to keep that population relatively low as befits an apex predator. Without the goanna to eat their eggs, these massively dangerous predators are seeing their population explode in ways that their environment, and let's face it, humans, aren't ready to handle. Another environmental ripple has to do with Australian cattle. There's a natural mechanism in place to protect cows from disease, and that is the mighty and majestic dung beetle. The dung beetles roll away huge amounts of dung, the cows aren't sitting in their own filth, everybody wins. Well, the cane toad has developed a behavior of ambushing dung beetles by hiding in the cow paths and have destroyed their population. And sure enough, disease among cattle is on the rise. Now, predators have no evolutionary adaptations to the toxins of the cane toad, so they are having to adapt behaviorally. Because this is Australia, the Thunderdome of biomes, some animals are beginning to show these behavioral adaptations. There's a species of bird that have developed a feeding habit of flipping the toad onto its back and then eating its belly and innards, avoiding the poisonous skin everywhere else. Some snakes and frogs have figured out that they need to eat the cane toad in its toadlet phase. Most encouragingly, though, are the horrifyingly named meat ants, an aggressive and highly active species, which have figured out the hack to eating cane toads. First, be immune to the toad's variety of toxin. Meat ants don't seem to be affected by the cane toad toxin at all. Second, they are cooperative, able to swarm and dismember a toad quickly. And third, cane toads have a very particular defense mechanism. They don't fight, they don't go into flight, they freeze. Since most frog species hunt by sight, the cane toad freezes in place instead of running or fighting when faced with danger, relying on its toxicity to protect it. So it just sort of sits there in place as the meat ants swarm it and tear it to pieces. which is gross and horrifying, but also kind of satisfying if you dislike the cane toad as much as most Australians. And don't get me wrong, these things are so disliked that the Australian Environmental Bureau needed to release a statement on the, quote, humane ways to exterminate a cane toad, end quote. They recommend freezing them to death, by the way. Because the majority of people in areas overrun by cane toads have taken to simply smashing them with cricket bats, stepping on them, jumping on them, kicking them, running over them with vehicles, shooting them, any means of extermination is generally viewed as fine. Because all attempts at control have failed. Trapping simply traps a number of native species as well. There was an idea to introduce a bacteria, virus, or native predator of the toads, which just risks having another massive invasive species problem. Short of a gigantic operation of dragging every pond and pool of standing water for toad eggs for years, there's no good way to eliminate these things. And they just keep getting farther and farther into Australia every year, displacing native species, trashing natural food webs, and causing ripple effects of which we still don't know the extent. The toads are coming, they are spreading, and all of Australia is at risk. And that's it. That's the story of the ongoing Australian cane toad invasion. Here at Relative Disasters, we make sure to fact-check our work to bring you the most accurate disasters possible. If you'd like to know more about our sources, they're cited at the beginning of the episode. Sometimes we do make mistakes, of course, so if you have any thoughts you'd like to share or corrections we need to know, please write to us at relative.disasters@gmail.com. We cannot respond to emails, but we do read each one. We really do. Or, if you'd like to shame us publicly, and we know you do, why not try our Instagram, @relative.disasters. A little housekeeping, just because some folks had some confusion. Our April Fool's episode topic this year was a real event, just its manner of presentation was our little bit of fun this year. The Qingyang event really did happen, for those of you who wrote in curious about it. Also, I'd like to thank Allison, who sent a very kind message about how our little podcast has helped her get through a rough time. I miss Ella as well, and I've got a few surprise guest hosts coming in the future. And for all those folks who've written in to say that the show's not as enjoyable as it used to be, I don't disagree. And I want to thank you guys for coming back to listen each week. I'd like to keep this thing going for as long as you want to listen to it. A big thank you to our patrons who support us on Patreon. You guys are great and help us justify keeping this podcast ad-free. As always, we'd like to thank our major disasters, Katie and Georgia, for their support. And this week's episode is brought to you by Andrea, who has never licked a toad on a trip to Peru in March of 2007, and by Al, winner of the Toad Hammerer Cricket Bat competition for 2023. Thank you all so much for joining us for this episode. I hope you've enjoyed the story, and I hope you'll join us again next week. With all this talk of toxicity, my throat's a little parched. So, Ella, next week we're going to go visit London in 1814, when London was struck by over 150,000 gallons of beer. On the next episode of Relative Disasters, we're going to talk about the London beer flood. Have a good week, and I will see you then.